Hello and welcome to Chew the Fat for the 4th of June 2021. My name is Russell Alford.
And my name is Patrick Hanlon.
And you're more than welcome to this next edition of our weekly podcast. And we have a very, very, very interesting show up ahead for you this week. We have three people being interviewed, two interviews in total, one featuring a fantastic editor and publisher who is making big waves on the Irish publishing scene at the moment, Kristen Jensen, plus Suzanne Rigby and Mark Hooper, who are the duo behind the incredibly popular, thanks to the pandemic, clickandcollection.com. And as usual, we will have plenty of information chats all throughout this podcast. But let's begin, which is the best place to begin, with the still as yet untitled... It hasn't got a title yet. It's still just a CTF notice board.
And it's on a postcard.
Yes, it still hasn't been renamed Chew the Fat Nuggets just yet. But maybe next week we can call it that.
The 8 has arrived in the Dublin Liberties at the Roanco Distillery, housed in the former Guinness Power Station. Across the summer, six local restaurants are bringing global tastes to special set menus served in the cocktail garden, including Spitalfields, Pickle, Night Market, Bahé, Matsu and Lil Porty, accompanied by great drinks, of course. Beeb Gourmand awarded Spitalfields kicks things off in June, followed by Pickle, and they run from Thursday to Sunday right through the summer. Lil Porty concludes the residencies at the end of August, and for an intro to Nick from Lil Porty, you can listen back to his episode of Chew the Fat, and also keep an ear out for Sunil from Pickle in an upcoming episode too. The first two traders have their booking slots open now, so check out rowandcowhiskey.com/outdoor-dining to get in on the action.
Weekly is branching out to a new weekly market in Harold's Cross on Greenmount Avenue in Dublin. What started last year as an online grocer, and wonderful at that, plus a delivery subscription service with a keen curation of producers from organic farms to condiments and cupboard staples, they're now adding a physical offering as an enhancement to their strong digital presence. It kicks off on the Saturday 5th of June from 10 till 5, and they will run every single week from Thursday to Sunday at the same hours where you can drop into their in-person market.
Also coming down the line to Dublin 6 West is Lots & Co, who are opening their third spot in the city. It's coming to Terenure later this summer. The popular purveyors of gourmet fine foods already run a duo of shops in Beggar's Bush and Clontarf. They're also currently hiring for the new store, so stay tuned to their social for more updates.
And specialising in great wines with no notions, embark on a new monthly wine adventure with Michelle and Tony of Nude Wine Co. They've just launched their Nude Wine Club, a monthly subscription for €55, where you will receive three hand-picked wines to your door, sourced from independent producers. Exploring a different theme each month, there's also an interactive Zoom tasting, which is always great crack, but you can also come and go as you please, as it is entirely contract-free. You can join the club at thenudewineco.ie.
Our talking point this week is kind of fitting, as I think the sun is breaking through the clouds more and more every day. So we're talking about outdoor, having picnics, al fresco stuff.
And it's been quite a week in terms of the outdoorsy kind of things, to say the least, especially in the big cities, the Corks, the Dublins and the Galways. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. And facilities, Sportaloos, bins,
opinions
and lots of it. And I think we're seeing a really interesting tide, let's just say, where this is concerned. And I know even the two of us have very differing opinions on elements of it, that you're like, stop gathering in crowds, whereas I'm like, young people don't have gardens, and it's a really difficult circle to square over the past couple of days and weeks. And we're seeing now, as we come into a bank holiday, as we record this particular podcast, we're seeing this effort to try and avoided the mistakes of last week where the likes of South William Street were just destroyed.
Yeah, thronged.
Destroyed.
Yeah.
It was thronged. It was destroyed. And yeah, we are going into now, we have, as of earlier this week, we have hospitality in the form of hotels, B&Bs and guest houses all opening up. And then there's a whole discussion there about, well, how come you're allowed indoor dining? Whereas yes. Next week, we're going to have outdoor dining permitted and pubs, of course, opening up for the, many of them for the first time since March of 2020.
A long time coming. And I think all of us have had kind of experience of the staycation summer of 2020 and kind of, as they say, pivoting.
Oh, he said it. Oh, he said it.
To enjoying things outside,
yeah,
and packing up a picnic, exploring your area, exploring other areas of Ireland. And I think already the offering is kind of increased, enhanced and stronger than it was last year.
Big time.
Obviously, all of us know that the Irish summer is unpredictable, so you kind of have to
What do you mean, unpredictable?
Unpredictable.
I can tell you one thing, young man. It is predictable because you'll think it's going to be sunny and it's going to be disgustingly wet.
Exactly. So you have to pack for kind of every eventuality, and that also extends it to your food and drink as well. So we are going to round up or have a quick chat about a couple of the options that have piqued our picnic interest.
Yes, pick up a picnic. How about that? So one of them that we have been really admiring from afar is the lavish four-person picnic that is full of Irish producers. This is from Project Picnic in Dublin. It's an upstart by Simone Cullen, and it features a constantly changing grazing menu, classic and contemporary takes on picnic food. The star of it, Scotch eggs.
Those Scotch eggs.
And they look like a thing of dreams. It's a very considered approach in terms of the packaging and the suppliers list. And if you'd like to order, you can go via their click and collection site by Thursday afternoons, and you can get pickup on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays. So perfect for a weekend picnic. At the moment, it's only delivering to Dublin City postcodes, and you can also collect from 16 Delier Street.
And also from Clement and Pico on Blessington Street, I think, as well.
Lovely.
If we go over to the other side of Ireland, to the other coast, to the counties of Sligo and Mayo, there's of course our very wonderful friends who run Pudding Row, who have kept us comfortably fed and
comforted
as well. They're comfort kits have been winging their way across the country for the guts of the past year. But now they have introduced picnic baskets. So you can hire a basket appointed with your own choice of savouries, sweets, treats and drinks.
And probably bagels.
And probably I'm not sure if it actually includes the bagels.
You just have to buy them yourself.
You pre-book, you pay a deposit for the use of the basket. You pick it up from them in Sligo from 12 p.m. onwards, and then bring it back empty at 5 p.m. Of course, they're still also posting and taking orders for their comfort kits,
which we'd highly recommend.
Oh, they're so good. And then close by, but not so close by, Castlebar's Cafe Rua and their Busca boxes are also being posted across Ireland, but they've now added on a Rua picnic Busca for €25, filled with gorgeous salads, spreads, sides, slaw, and a gorgeous baguette as well. I mean,
what more could you want?
What more could
especially
you want?
Especially on the Wild Atlantic Way. Now, if the Wild Atlantic Way is your 2020 location of choice, maybe Dungarvan, Waterford, the Copper Coast, the Waterford Greenway is your choice for 2021. I know it is for us later in the summertime. The Tannery in Dungarvan has just announced their picnic offering. It's perfect for a stroll or a cycle along the Greenway, in my case on an e-bike because I desperately need it, or if you're just going to the beach. €35 for a full complement of delicious picnic bites, both savoury and sweet, and there's even vegetarian options, and you can also add on wines, which is especially handy.
Yeah, and it's a good small choice of the wines. And if you've not had Paul Flynn's food before, trust us.
Oh my goodness, you're missing out.
Trust us, you are missing out. A producer in Clare who you might have heard on this podcast before.
Who could that be?
Burren Smokehouse, owned by Birgitta Hedden Curtin, has a novel, elegant and simple approach to the classic picnic, all angled around her incredible smoked salmon. You can order her picnic boxes on her site. You can also add on wine, Prosecco, and even champagne if you're feeling a bit bougie as well. You can also order, and I love this, those covetable and kitsch flying elephant transportable picnic tables as well to really have the full al fresco picnic experience. So also check out the Burren Smokehouse in Clare too.
And also, if you do wish to just buy their products as well, there's hampers and baskets from a number of the producers around the Burren as well available on their website for shipping across Ireland. Go back to the city though, Tiller and Grain.
Love.
Gorgeous spot in Dublin city centre. They have just launched a two-person picnic bag for €50, which you can pre-order from their site, and you can, if you've want to, you can completely just drool over the menu because it's constantly changing. One of the great things as well that they're also offering is a staycation box, which is aimed at groups of four people. It costs €150 and everything is ready to eat, so when you get to your destination, you've just gone for a swim, you've just gone to the beach, or you've gone for a walk, everything is ready to go, which is exactly what you need. No trying to figure out the ovens, playing with the knobs and switches or anything like that. Just eat away to your heart's content. But then closer to home for ourselves anyway, here in the Boyne Valley, you've got Scholar's Townhouse in Drogheda for €35 plus the Headford Arms in Kells, where they are doing lavish picnics, which are €50 for two people, €70 for the family, and you can pre-order and take it on a day trip as well.
I'd also throw in there Overend's Kitchen at Airfield Estate in Dundrum, who introduced a picnic offering last year, and they are bringing it back over the weekends across the summer. Their picnic boxes are aimed at two. They also have a special kids box as well. I mean, such a great idea. And so easy to order. All you have to do is order before 4 p.m. on the previous day before your intended collection, and their food is always really gorgeously put together. So a great one to have in your
car? Bike.
Yeah,
well, we're not trying to encourage people in cars, in your bike backpack. Yes. So I think there's a great selection of things there. We really just wanted to give a bit of a plug to a lot of those, because I think it's a great idea for the summer. It's a great activity. No, you know, love going into the shop and getting a soggy sandwich and all that type of stuff, but why not get something nice? Nah, yeah. Get something nice and treat yourself. How often do you have a picnic? I'm actually currently looking at three picnic baskets beside us as we're recording this.
And they haven't had a proper outing yet either. Yeah. So I think it's time to really treat yourself and to take advantage of the immense options across Ireland.
Absolutely.
In terms of the picnic.
Between the talking points and, of course, the as yet unnamed notice board, if there is anything any news story from the food world and drinks world in Ireland, you can email us at hiya@gastrogaze.com with any of your stories, or send us a message on Instagram or on Twitter, where we are @gastrogaze. If you can let us know by Thursday afternoon of next week, we can try and include it in next week's podcast.
So to our first interview of this episode. Now, we've all ordered our fair share of takeaway throughout the pandemic, and as more and more restaurants have emerged into that scene, boxing up the restaurant experience has been pivotal to the hospitality industry surviving. Yet, in order to get product into customers' hands, a lot of technology behind the scenes has to be employed to ensure the smooth, seamless running.
That's where Click and Collection has come in, an Irish-owned online ordering platform which connects food and drink operators to customers. Its founders, Suzanne Rigby and Mark Hooper, were in a totally different industry until St. Patrick's weekend 2020, when they found the business in pub advertising they had just successfully gotten off the ground was going to fall serious victim to the pandemic. Very soon after, Click and Collection came to being and has been killing it ever since. We've been utterly fascinated by the incredibly easy to use but seriously savvy and powerful site they've spent the last year growing, and we're delighted that Mark and Suzanne join us now to talk about their business a little bit more. Hello guys.
Hi, how are you?
How are you both today? Thank you for joining us on Chew the Fat.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to have a chat. Thank
you. So let's talk. Let's go back in time. And I don't have any, you know, transformative music to make it sound like a time warp or anything like that. I just don't. I'm not that prepared.
So disappointing.
Go back in time before the pandemic, life pre-COVID-19. You weren't running a click and collection website, were you?
No, we weren't.
No, we definitely weren't. What we were doing at that point in time was we had just set up a new business, which we called Tenviso. And in essence, that was sort of hardware and software for digital signage. That incidentally, we did put in bars, but so it was like an advertising medium, or that was the first iteration of that, if you like. And we've been doing that for about, probably built it about 4 years, but in actual fact, should I say 4 years? That seems like such a long time.
Wow.
But in reality, it was in the world for maybe about a year. So
we were just coming up on our first birthday. So we started trading in April 2019. We were just about to come up on our first birthday. And in layman's terms, what we have existing at the moment is an advertising network in pubs. So obviously 12th of March, you know, we were standing having a conversation and we heard the news, and my first reaction was, God, does that mean the kids aren't in school? Does that mean I should mind my own kids? And then my second was, oh my God, does that mean our business is closing? That was the reality for us, was it was an overnight shut, as it was for you know, most of the hospitality industry.
And then from there, about a month later, is that correct, when you took your first order on the system? Is that correct? So what kind of happened in that intertime?
That is correct. Yeah. So when that all happened around, I don't know, the 12th, 15th, whatever, that St. Patrick's Day weekend, just got into my head, I don't know why, to do this. Maybe I was talking to people, I don't know, something clicked. And I just thought, maybe we should try and build something that just makes it easier for people to do business online, rather than building individual websites, but just like a platform that would just make it super easy. And I just went online and I bought the web domain.
Makes it sound so simple.
Mark, you give the simple explanation. Then yeah. Suzanne, if you can jump in and give the longer one, that would be great.
Yeah. And then, so I just went online and bought the domain name, clickandcollection.com. And then we started talking to a couple of developers and trying to get things going. And we quickly built a prototype in a period of about 3 to 4 weeks. And then, on Good Friday, the first shop went live and started taking orders.
So I guess you could say
And since then, it's been a whole lot of hassle.
And we'll get to that in a moment. But yeah. I guess you have essentially started up again in a global pandemic. Had you any help, any support, anything?
No, nothing.
I had the help of Suzanne.
Bootstrapped the whole, we did the whole thing ourselves. No, there was no support. Obviously, we went on the pub payment and it was just survival mode.
There was no point. There was actually no point looking for the support. So we tried a little bit, and it just went, just get on with it. Like, you know, if you wait around to try and get funding or whatever else, nothing's going to happen. So we just sort of just did it and just see where we ended up, so to speak.
Had you found an audience quite quickly?
Yeah. So, I mean, we started talking to people. We obviously started with friends that we knew that had venues and cafes and that, and you know, they started using it, and it was super simple for them to set up, and really easy then for their customers to actually use it. And it really was, it was word of mouth. They very much, you know, we worked with pubs a lot, but we hadn't worked with food-based businesses really at all. You know, and there's a massive community of you all, and there was a huge amount of sharing. And really, if somebody is doing something and it's working for them, and the next person says, you know, what are you doing? How did you do that? So, you know, if I went out and rang somebody and tried to sell the platform, so to speak. I mean, it'd just be, they'd be glazed over within 3 nanoseconds going, yeah, no, don't want what you want. You know, you're sort of, just assuming you're some, you're some sort of faceless platform that has been in planning for years and has existed. And, so it was really all of that word of mouth and that sort of peer-to-peer recommendation that people realized that, we were in the exact same position as everyone that we were helping. And, it was that survival mode for us, and that's where the energy came from. And I think that's what made it work.
But you have to remember that the thing that we launched with on the Good Friday was very basic, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to, large chocolate. We're so instructive on many, many others in actually fine-tuning that product. Mm-hmm. Because they'd come back and go, any chance of a report? And he went, what type of report? And we go,
yeah,
like a Zed report. What's a Zed report?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, so they told us what it was, and then we sort of coded it, if you understand. Yeah. So it's like, we'd like, is there anything else? We like different sort of delivery methodologies and, or not collection methodologies, mm-hmm. or whatever else. So it was little things, or can we add, extras and options to products? So over the period of maybe 6-7 months, it was quite intense in terms of building all those extra features. So what we have today versus what we started with, there are sort of like, it's quite a different offering in a sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of, an online ordering system is not necessarily a new thing. There's lots of systems out there. We just wanted to build something that you could be up and running within 30 minutes. Stripe handles all of the payments. They're best in class. So our system connects in. There's all stock management, all of the things that a lot of places couldn't manage. It was infinite products, basically all the admin in the background. So all your packing slips are generated, all your stock management CSV files, everything is exportable. Yeah. So then they can manage all of that side of it. And, they just weren't finding that quick and simple solution anywhere else.
Was it really a case that, as you say, it's like there have been plenty of online shops available all the time anyway, but specifically for the food and hospitality industry with those limitations, I think I remember, and I think this is kind of where we became aware of what you guys are doing in particular. There was a couple of restaurants who were setting up click and collect ideas or whatever, and we're like, oh my god, we got like too many orders, we don't even have that many covers in the restaurant at this time. And this is when then I think you started developing the thing of the timings, the quantities per times, and that's all part of the code. I have no clue about anything about coding. I am very much a product of my generation. I'm not a 4-year-old, so please explain it all to me.
Yeah, so basically, there's a lot of people that only have a certain amount of stock, and you would have the likes of, say, Michael's that would, be out literally collecting the lobsters in the morning and then go, this is the amount that I have, and up it goes at that amount. So it was building all of those features so that they could really manage it on a granular level, but still be a variant of the restaurant that they were without, being that sort of seasonal, fresh, all that kind of stuff. You can run all the other way as well. It's all in there now. It can be done any which way.
But believe it or not, we actually did have this sort of like global thought or big plan. And it was literally at the beginning, it was just like, how do we simplify the process of doing business online? And there was a couple of criteria that we had. It's not necessarily like how we normally approach things, but this, if for some reason, it all sort of crystallized. And it was, we wanted to be like super easy, that it would only take 30 minutes, from 30 minutes in terms of setting it up, right? That you didn't have to have a knowledge of coding or how to do anything. It was a real no-code solution. And the third, and the other part of that was, it had to be your own web shop. So that it wasn't, so at the end, when this all goes away, that you can still have a web shop or an online business. And then the third part was, I think that's three, is, I'm not very good at counting, get me away from the stock control.
Build that feature in.
yeah. It was that it had to be good value. And, so the cost wouldn't be an impediment. And that's what we've tried to do in the process. And there were sort of the overriding principles of the whole thing. And the rest of it is all, it's features and just elements and fine tuning and everything else. But we still try and hold true to those sort of principles. So, you know, the idea is that it is could be one of the simplest ways to literally set up and take an order and a payment online anywhere. I don't know, but it could be. But that was the thought process behind it, at least.
In terms of now, as we are moving through the levels, into the phases, into I don't know what they're on anymore,
you know.
As we're moving through life at some sort of trajectory.
Yeah.
We are, as we discussed on the previous episode of True to Fat, we're seeing the reduction in meal kit services and everything like that, and we're seeing more of the restaurants opening outside and eventually indoors as well. How are you adapting your model in order to continue your own business, still supporting these businesses, and also in a COVID-friendly environment, trying to maintain this kind of contactless world, I guess, that we're trying to get used to?
Well, this week now, it's coming out, we have launched table ordering. So you basically build your tables within your dashboard. It's all simple. It's just an added feature for all of the existing merchants and any new businesses that start. And there is a QR code generated for each individual table. So you could have 20 tables. Customer sits down, scans the QR, is brought to your menu, orders, and then it will hit the business's live dashboard. They prep the food and bring it out. So it's already paid for. You have the details of the lead on the table or whoever's ordering. Yes. And it's clean, contactless, convenient. So that...
With no app.
With no app to download.
Really super simple.
Yeah. So as businesses are starting to reopen, the system very much is a set of tools where they can, you know, kind of dial up and dial down. There are a lot of businesses that are continuing, you know, with online ordering. I mean, online ordering is something of the past, the present, and definitely something of the future. I mean, every business needs to be able to take an online order. It's a bit like a mobile phone. I mean, you'll do it eventually. So, you know, for the businesses that have adapted as quickly as they did this year, you know, that's something that they should move forward with. You know, whether they can see that way forward at the moment or not, you know, there's a vortex at the moment, and they need to figure their way through. But the majority of people that we've spoken to, you know, there's a huge amount of logistics, like you did say in that podcast, in that, you know, the restaurants are small, kitchens can be small, you know, there's staffing issues. There's so many things that we are unaware of that they need to get through to see. So, I mean, I think that we're in a big period of change, and September is when you're going to really see things kind of level out again. I think that meal kits, definitely for the customers like me, a mom with two kids, is definitely something that I don't want to see leave my life, you know, because you know, I'm living outside of town, getting into town, getting home from work, even finishing work, which just never stops. So, you know, getting home, getting all glammed up, getting back out is just a monumental feat. I'm just like, no. Whereas I come home, all I have to do is make sure the kitchen's tidy, and then I'm like, here. And it's a process of discovery, opening it up. And there's lots of restaurants doing gorgeous hot takeaway now as well, which is brilliant, you know. Where I'm based, there's a gorgeous restaurant up behind me, Woodruff, and it's like a hidden gem. And it's, you know, so that kind of stuff is amazing to be able to get now. So I would hope that, you know, our horizon is going to stay as colourful as it is now once they figure out the hybrid.
It's quite nice as well that you can, that, you know, that there's certain people we're working with that have sort of expanded their offerings to delivery nationwide. You know, when you, at the beginning of all this, you never would have thought, is that going to be a thing? But, you know, like the Beach House, Quangi, you know, all these people that you can just order on a Wednesday and they arrive on a Friday. Good. It's just fantastic, you know, and it's sort of experiential and really engaging. So it's just, you would hope that lasts, because I think there would be an appetite for it. But I suppose I understand from the business's perspective, it may be hard to deliver on it as well, you know.
I think it's also a case of, like, it's about connection, and you're kind of appealing to both the operator and the consumer, and you're providing the infrastructure to connect them, easy on the operator, accepting orders and churning stuff out, And also easy on the consumer to find and specify the exact things that they want.
Yeah.
We're trying.
And succeeding. But on that point, challenges. So in your own business, I mean, we covered starting up in April, then a kind of a half year of evolution. After that point up to today, talk us through some of the challenges that you've faced.
Oh, God.
Non-existent work-life balance.
Check.
Just think, some things just come out of left field and you just can't anticipate them. And you go, Christ, I didn't see that coming. And it sort of knocks you for six. Yeah. And it's not that we haven't done it before. We have. We've sort of been self-employed for like a long time. So it's like, it's not that we should expect them, but sometimes they just come at you. And it comes at you in a personal level, you know, just certain things in life. And then from a work level with people you're working with, and some, you know, they're so varied. And there's one or two things I probably shouldn't get into. But
I'm like, please stop talking now.
Yeah, it's
standby. Lawyers are on standby, don't worry.
Edit this, please. And it's just part of, you just have to, I suppose this, sometimes it's just being, you just have to be a bit of tenacity, mm-hmm. maybe, or...
I mean, you know, it's a bit like, you know, mobile phone systems, you know, 3 goes down for a couple of minutes, like, technology doesn't always work. I mean, we don't control the universe. So, you know, if something goes down, you know, it's managing that. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think that, you know, one of the big things for us is that we are here, we're at the end of the phone. Most people have my number. I'm at the end of a WhatsApp, an email, a DM. I have all of those things that I'm trying to cut from other people's lives in terms of that admin, and I have all of them. Somebody needs to create a system for me to sort of channel it all through. But it's, we may not be able to solve a problem, but it's being able to share a problem and to go, yeah, it is going to be fixed, and they have somebody that they can actually speak to. But, you know, sometimes, yeah, it's completely out of our control, and, you know, a server could go down for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that few minutes, I swear to God, feels like 3 weeks. I mean, I'm scarred for life afterwards.
And as you...
But thankfully, it's few and far, few and far between. We're better able to handle them now.
As you continue...
You learn a lot along the way. That's for sure. Yeah.
As you, I guess, evolve or grow or expand or even just continue, is it getting easier and easier, or is it harder and harder?
I think emotionally everyone's quite exhausted at the moment, and going through another open up is always quite difficult because you're all moving at different paces. And I don't mean that in terms of the business, but I mean in terms of your friends and your peers. Some people are, you know, in the middle of every crowd that they can find already, and, you know, I'm still not that comfortable going outside my front door. So
is it easier or more difficult or whatever? I think it's sort of different. Mm-hmm. And I think always when you move through the periods of transition, and I think it's a more economy-wide transition, that it's hard to figure out some of that bit. Certainly when it comes to the technology and the product, I think that's getting easier. That's easier for sure, because it's more built at this point in time. Mm-hmm. But there's some of the other pieces that, like the unknowns, and it's just trying to navigate them and sort of see how you get through the shoals, if you like, and just figure out, well, where, you know, what's happening here, how do we get through this, where we're going. And it sometimes that's quite difficult. And don't have a crystal ball. And so,
yeah, and I think that one of the things with the fact that the businesses that we work with started using us in the middle of a pandemic, you know, I think they, you know, some people can think that it's part of a solution for when everything was closed, as opposed to it's part of a solution for our moving forward. Mm. They're like, oh yeah, great, we just want to get back to being a restaurant. But they have a whole new set of customers now, you know, that aren't necessarily bums on seats in the restaurant, and it's
hopefully
it's
they will be, but
being able to have the headspace for them to identify that they, you know, this is something, and these are customers that are buying from them in this way, and they may never transfer to a bum on the seat. So it's being able to still service them in some way in, you know, maybe not in the next few weeks while they figure things out, but definitely, you know, kind of come the end of the summer, you know, into September, you've got, you know, the dark depths of winter. Like there's lots of businesses that we work with that aren't restaurant based. Mm. You know, they could be one or two people businesses. You know, there's lots of food trucks, there's lots of new bakers, you know, there's a huge amount of new businesses starting. I mean, COVID has been the last year has been a vibrant time for new businesses starting, because I think they stopped what they were doing for whatever reason, and you know, they just thought now is the time. I mean, can it get any worse? No. You know, let's just try something. Let's do it. And for lots of those businesses, you know, they've grown so quickly. Some of them nearly have to take a break and go, oh my God, we've grown so fast. We weren't ready for it. We just need to take a few weeks now and sort of figure out our way forward. Lots of them are now supplying other cafes and businesses with their product, you know, so they're selling wholesale and direct to customer. And, you know, it's been a really interesting time.
I bet it has been very, and I think that's the kind of mood across the board, and it's the community kind of aspect of it all, as you say, of like, you've been such an integral part to so many other people's reopenings, to their re-establishment in the market and everything like that. Talking about the market in full, and apologies if I start to come across as a bit like a Financial Times journalist here, because that is
shock turn for you.
Yeah, I know, that would make a change. In terms of, obviously over the years there's been lots of controversies with other kind of online delivery services such as Deliveroo and Uber Eats for like not passing on tips and paying staff correctly, workers' rights and the likes. And then even from, this is the most simplest equation as well, our local Chinese takeaway where we order many spice bags from on a regular basis, the lady who works there is like, stop using Just Eat, use our app because you keep getting charged. And we're like, okay, if you insist. And so that's how we do it, and we save about probably €1.50 or something on it. In terms of costs for a business,
they probably save quite a bit more. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
So in terms of things of costing, so if you know, there is a business owner listening right now thinking of setting up on clickandcollection.com, how does it kind of work? What is the cost benefits essentially, and how does the whole system work essentially? Very Financial Times asking of a question there, Russell Alford. Thank you.
I'll try and answer it in a very Financial Times way. I'll start talking about our sponsor if you don't mind.
Please.
We're actually working with Visa Card at the moment, and what they're doing is they want to encourage more and more businesses who haven't been online to be online. And so what they've sort of partnered with us, and they've basically said that each new business they will pay for their subscription for the first 3 months on our system. So in a way, the first 3.5 months are free because you get a trial for 2 weeks, and then they get 3 months complements of Visa. But failing that, the normal cost per month is €19 for XVAT for a subscription. And then what we do is we charge a small transaction fee, which is 2.9% per month, per transaction. Is that very Financial Times?
Very financial.
Simple.
Well, you use percentages, so that's
Yeah.
That's very good. The partnership with Visa obviously is a great boost for you guys, and especially within a year of setting up the business and establishing it. I think that's a really great coup. So fair play to you for getting that off the ground. Mark and Suzanne, clickandcollection.com. Thank you so much for joining us on Chew the Fat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated.
Has the cookbook publishing industry gone a bit stale? Kristen Jensen thinks so, and has set places at the table for a whole new generation of authors from Ireland's diverse food industry. An experienced editor by trade, Kristen is shaking up the system and is the founder and publisher of upcoming imprint Blosso books. It's actually currently far surpassing its initial funding round on Kickstarter. She describes the soon-to-be-published series as being what street food is to restaurants: casual, accessible, diverse, and exciting.
Now, full disclosure, we are actually involved in this project as authors for our debut cookbook called Hot Fat, being released in 2022. But regardless of that, Kristen's vision is definitely something right up our street to cover and something we think you should know about. So, hello, Kristen.
Hello. I'm happy to be at your virtual dining room studio table.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is a very advanced radio studio that we happen to be in, not our dining room table at all.
It's all a ruse. How are you, Kristen?
Good. Very excited to be halfway through the Kickstarter campaign, and it's just flying and so successful.
It really, really has flown, and I think the audience of it has really grabbed the concept and ran. So could you give us a kind of a brief overview of your concept?
Okay, so I'm sure your listeners already know your news about being part of this project. So Blast Books is a new small format cookbook series. The idea being that by making the books small, we can play around more and have more voices, more new voices, more different types of food, more topics, compared to kind of like the big standard 250 page cookbook, which is increasingly hard to get a book deal for. So this was just a way to kind of open up the field for writers and for readers and cooks, you know, to give more variety and just to kind of be able to experiment more and have more fun and play in the kitchen.
It's such a great concept. And I have a question kind of about your choice of a smaller format, in that has it been a case of it's too expensive to get the other type over the line, or is it a case that our attention spans have gotten smaller and smaller over the years, in that if you open up a cookbook, chances are you aren't going to cook absolutely everything?
That is an interesting take that nobody has put forward before with the attention span angle. No, so I was coming at the small format more from the cost point of view, that the reason it's so hard to get a cookbook deal is because they're prohibitively expensive to produce. You're talking like 50,000 euros minimum, because all that photography, the stylist, you've got to have somebody cooking the food behind the scenes, not to mention the usual publishing stuff of editor, typesetter, indexer. It's full color, it's, you know, because of all the photography, it's hardcover. So all of that adds up. And then, you know, X thousand of copies, you know, for a print run. So all of that adds up quite significantly. So that was my main, like the thing that I really kind of stuck on, going, well, all right, I know that, and that's the reality, but there's got to be another way to do it. And so this is what I hit on. It's like, okay, if we just shrink the books, so they're A5 size instead of kind of the bigger cookbook size that you're used to, and they're 72 pages as opposed to 225, 250 plus pages, and there's no photography, they're all illustrated. So that's another kind of cost issue, but also just a way to make them different and fun and quirky. As far as the attention span, I wouldn't have said it that way. My take was more along the same lines. A big cookbook can be a little intimidating, maybe a little overwhelming. Yes, nobody, unless you're kind of doing the Julia and Julia thing, or Julia, you know, you're not going to make every single recipe. So the focus there was that there's only 25 or 30 recipes in these small books. So every recipe has to earn its place. It's got to be really delicious. It's got to be a winner. There's no room for filler.
What was the moment where you went, eureka, I have it, this is what I want to create? Because you're very well experienced in this industry. You have many years, 20 years experience publishing, editing, including writing and co-writing your own books. What was the point that made you go, this is what I want to do now?
Good question. So it actually all started last summer. So actually about this time, exactly last year, kind of in a strange way, I suppose, it was kicked off by the protests in the States around George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. And the way that kind of came into this conversation was it sparked conversations in the US and the UK about the lack of diversity and inclusivity in book publishing in general. And then that started to trickle down into food writing specifically, and that's where you were starting to see these conversations about cultural appropriation and recipes and just, you know, who's not being represented in cookbooks, in food. So I was seeing these conversations happening because, as you say, like, I'm in the book world and the cookbook world specifically, and they were right, you know, like it was absolutely true. Those conversations weren't happening in Ireland though. So again, this coupled with this longstanding frustration I'd had as a person in the industry, but also as an avid cookbook buyer myself, just that we weren't, you know, if you kind of wanted something that wasn't mainstream, you were having to look to the UK and the US or Australia or the English, other English language territories to get something different or niche or a deep dive into a topic or cuisine. And that was such a shame because we have so many talented, creative, innovative, world-class people right here. So all of that was kind of swirling around in my head, and being the pandemic, being at home, having nowhere to go and nothing to do, just had some extra headspace as well to let these ideas marinate. So that was kind of where it all came from, was based on just world events, I suppose, really, coupled with, like I said, my own industry experience and this long-standing frustration from the consumer side, just wanting more variety and wanting to be able to highlight the people we have right here on that world stage who are just as good as anything coming out of the US or the UK.
Amazing. And how had you gone about choosing or contacting each of the authors?
So that was the hard part because, you know, I've got a list as long as my arm and I'm literally adding to it every week. So as you know, the first book is Tacos by Lily Ramirez Foran. And I'm friends with Lily, and I knew that she had shopped around a book proposal and had not been able to get a deal. And I just thought, again, that was such a shame and a missed opportunity because she is just incredible. Also, she ticks all the boxes that you're supposed to have in order to get a book deal in this day and age. She's got her own shop where she can sell the books. She has supper clubs and cooking classes that are so popular. They have a waiting list. She's on television. She does all the festivals. It was a bit like, what more are you supposed to do? So I always, and this is going back a few years now, so I always had this in my head, like, if I ever won the lotto and set up my own publishing company, I'd publish Lily's book. So I always knew, she's like, I want to publish Lily. So I just reached out to her once I decided to actually make this happen. Because I have to say too, once that idea last summer got its hooks into me, it's like, I have to do this. If I don't do this, I'm always going to wonder what if. It's always going to be eating away at me. So I just have to. So anyway, so reached out to Lily, had no preconceived ideas about what exactly to do, more than just that I wanted to work with her. Within 5 minutes, we had hit on tacos because she was saying that was her most popular class. And I thought, this is perfect. Everybody knows tacos. They aren't a hard sell. They're familiar, they're fun, but we're going to take it to the next level because these are Lily's tacos, using authentic ingredients that you can get at her shop and the best of Irish produce. It's just the best of both worlds. Then, as you know, I approached you guys. So, because I've obviously, similar thing. I couldn't believe you hadn't been snapped up by a publisher already. And so the three of us went for a nice long walk along the river and just were hashing out some ideas, because same kind of thing. I had a few ideas I'd put to you that we batted around, and, you know, but again, it was really organic the way we hit on your idea for your book with the deep fried, and it just made 100% sense. And it was no surprise that was one of the topics that came out of those discussions. Book number three, The United Nations of Cookies by Jess Murphy and Owen Klusky. Same kind of thing. I just wanted to work with Jess in some way. Called her up out of the blue. I'd never even met Jess, you know, no surprisingly way. For all of us being in the food world. And again, she told me about this project she was doing with Owen Klusky at Bread 41. And it's like the tacos, who doesn't love cookies? Yet we've got a bigger message in here because the book is underpinned by recipes that Jess is collecting from refugees via her work with the UNHCR, the refugee agency, as well as other immigrants from around Ireland. So it's all cookies, but it's from all sorts of people who have made Ireland their home. And it's just interesting because it's one of those things, like every culture has a little sweet biscuit or cookie or a little bite to have with a coffee, you know, kind of thing. So it was a real great commonality and a way to get a bigger message out there at the same time. And then the last one is Walk by Kwan Gee Chan. Same thing, all these people, all these authors, it's like, I can't believe I am so lucky to be getting to publishing, to be publishing you all for the first time. Again, he's been the chef on the 6 o'clock show for about 5 years. He has the Bowls restaurant in Dublin, his food truck, his Chan Chan sauces, his really popular nationwide meal kits. So really excited to be working with him, and he's going to be bringing, you know, his Irish Asian food to the Irish audience for the first time as well.
What a lineup. I mean, it's just so inspiring. And authors aside, it's also a small team behind the scenes too, who are all female. So could you also introduce, I guess, the organizing editing team?
Sure. Okay, so I'm the founder, publisher, editor. So I'm kind of the wizard behind the curtain, I'd like to say. And then I've got Jane Matthews, who actually lives nearby in Laytown. She's the creative director. So she is doing the design, the layout. She's liaising with the printers. She's got tons of background in all of that. So I've worked with her before. We worked together for about 5 years on the Super Value Fresh magazine. So we've already got a really great working relationship and rapport. And then the third person is Nikki Hooper, who's our artist for the books. And she was another person. I just found her on Instagram and called her up last autumn going, I love your work. I'm putting together this project. Would you be interested? And had no previous, you know, connection to her at all. And she's the kind of person, I feel like I've known her for years. We've just hit it off straight away. I'm so lucky to have not just the authors, but as you say, this amazing little team where we're all well-versed in what we're doing. You know, we've been doing this stuff. Like, I've been editing, Jane's been designing, Nikki's been illustrating for 20, 30 years. So, but to put it together in this new way is really exciting for all three of us. And I'm really happy that they're so excited about the project too. It gives me a great buzz.
And it's such a wonderful team. And actually that Nikki's experience has a great tie back to the two of us, because she designed the 1994 Eurovision logo as well, which we discovered just after being introduced, and we were like,
had to pinch ourselves.
It's like, this is just so creepy. This is the perfect combination of everything coming together.
No, it was meant to be.
Exactly. It was perfect.
I think your story is so inspiring, because obviously you have your chops in this industry, have paid your dues, have decades of experience, but I think your project and your story is about tenacity and having a spark. And even though you have all of that experience, it's scary to put yourself out there and to have a spark of an idea and go, I'm actually going to do it.
Oh, so true. I mean, I think anybody who does work in a creative way can relate. It's that roller coaster. Like, I'm so excited. This is a great idea. And then the next day or the next hour, you're kind of going, oh, like, what am I doing? Nobody's going to like it. So I tell you, when I pressed publish on that Kickstarter page, it's like, oh, world, please like it. You know, please be nice. And because, you know, that way you're sitting by yourself. It's like, well, I have this idea. I think it's a good idea. Is anybody else going to think it's a good idea? You know, so it's so rewarding. The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive and excited, and which is everything I'd hoped for.
And in terms of the Kickstarter, how did that go? It's still ongoing at this moment in time as well, just to point out if you are listening as this episode has gone out. But tell us how it all went, because you had an original target and it surpassed it.
Yes. So I originally, the idea is it's going to be a quarterly series, so hence the four books. But I actually pitched the Kickstarter just for the first two books. So that was your book and Lily's book, because I'm aware of times are strange, you know, with a lot of people being out of work. I didn't want to aim too high or, at, you know, overreach, I suppose. So I thought, well, if we can just get these first two books off the ground and get the ball rolling, and then if it goes really well, maybe we can do all four. But if nothing else, I've got the next two books lined up for year two, and eventually I'll make it a quarterly series. Well, within 3 days, it was fully funded. and Kickstarter named it one of their projects we love, which is like getting the big shiny gold star from Kickstarter, which is amazing, and gives it actually more of an international reach as well, because then it's featured on the Kickstarter homepage. So yeah, fully funded within just 3 or 4 days, I think, which then meant we were able to put book number 3, The United Nations of Cookies, make that one available for pre-order. That one was funded again within just a few days. And so then we were able to unlock Kwanji's book, Walk, number 4. So all 4 books are now fully funded, basically. But that doesn't mean that there's no reason not to go and put in an order. Effectively, this Kickstarter is just pre-ordering a book, just like you would if your favorite author was coming out with a book in the autumn and you can go onto Amazon and pre-order it. This is the exact same thing. So you're not just kind of donating money or investing. You're ordering a book. And there's all combinations of the books. You can get all 4. And there's a discount available for that. You can get them individually. You can get multiple copies of just one. You can get any combination of any of the 4 books. So if anybody's interested, they're all still available to pre-order on that Kickstarter Lost to Books page until June 14th, which is when the Kickstarter closes. And so there's no reason not to, you know, keep it going. And in fact, I'm keen to get as many backers as possible, again, just to show, like, well, okay, after being told for years and years, all this stuff is too niche, you know, quote unquote, it's too niche. It's like, okay, it might be niche, but it's a big niche. And there are a lot of people who are interested and excited and curious and wanting to explore and support, you know, smaller businesses and new authors.
I am living for the infectiousness of your reaction, because this is the first time we've talked obviously loads over the last couple of weeks, but this is the first time we've seen you on camera talking about this. And as you're saying, like, it's fully funded, everything's unlocked, the world is amazing. All I can think back is to that chat by the river where you were like, yeah, and the thing is, Kickstarter don't release any of the money if it doesn't get fully funded. So I'm kind of scared of this. Mm-hmm. And look at where you are now. It's inspiring. It's amazing to see. And I think the reaction has been so, so positive about the whole thing. In terms of future topics, and I'm not asking you to divulge year 2 or year 3 or year 4, in terms of future topics, because you in terms of the submissions that you are asking for as well on the Blaster Books website, you do say to avoid things like dietary things and various things. What are you kind of eyeing up, let's say, without being too obvious about any of the names? you know the two of us, you'll say something as a cuisine and we'll start drawing lines and going, oh, that must be such and such's book. Yes. That's lovely.
Totally. So yeah, I think you can kind of get a gist just from those first 4 books I talked about. The thing I'm really looking for with the Blasta book series is a single strong idea or theme or cuisine or topic. So just like, also because the books are small, they don't lend themselves to starters, breakfast, lunch. You know, they're not even going to be divided into chapters because they're just not long enough. So it's really just one strong idea. And that could be a food. It could be a cuisine. It could be like, you guys, you have this topic, it's deep fried. So you are, you know, deep frying all manner of things, but the hook is it's all deep fried. So that, and as you say, what I'm not looking for is what we've already got a lot of in the mainstream publishers, which is weight loss, you know, kind of whatever's the latest trend, or like the quick and easy cooking. And all of those things absolutely have their place. And I like a quick and easy midweek meal as much as the next person, but there's just a lot of that. And the Blasta books, they're not meant for that. They're meant to be more fun. Well, yeah, fun, not functional, because a lot of the mainstream books, they've become very functional again, which is completely fine. They're serving a purpose and obviously one that a lot of people want. But I'm more interested in, okay, there's a lot of that going on just fine over there. I'm going to be over here in this lane doing something completely different. So hence the tacos, the deep fried, you know, and I'm sure you guys get the same reaction, like, ooh, deep fried, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, come on, you know you want it, yep. You know you love it. So you may as well cook it in your own kitchen and have some fun.
That's the kind of reaction that we get quite a lot, generally anyway, whenever we say we've deep fried anything. It's like, oh God, that again type of thing. But I think that in the discussion that we had, it's like, and when we were kind of pitching it along the riverfront to you, we pitched about five different ideas to you, and you're like, yeah, that sounds nice. And then I think I said something about chips, and you went, Jesus, I'd love some chips or something. And that was pretty much it sold. And I think it's interesting because whilst on one front, it's so much about the topic on hand and the functionality of the recipes, it's also people's stories and people's tales coming through. And I think especially Lily, and then with Jess's work as well, like, that's going to be so fascinating to read. You and I and Patrick have this love of the kind of the storybook cookbook type of thing, don't we? Is that coming into Bloster Books in any kind of way, even in short forms, that kind of telling a story?
100%. That's an excellent point to make. Yes, that's Bloster Books is all about the story. So, I mean, obviously they're cookbooks, but like, if you go to our website or the Kickstarter, you'll see we've got this Venn diagram.
Yeah.
And one circle, it says food, and the other circle, it says stories. And then where they intersect is connection, because food and stories connect absolutely everyone. Like, in the same way you could say music does as well.
Yeah.
It connects absolutely everyone everywhere. And so part of the frustration with the narrowing of, you know, or just being so hard to get a book deal for people, was that limits the number of people who can tell their stories through food.
Yeah.
And there's so many amazing stories out there. Again, just what I was saying at the start, like, there's so many incredible, talented, exciting, innovative, interesting people with stories to tell. So yes, while I was saying the kind of like the main driver is that single strong theme, the other side of that coin is a really compelling story to tell. So you can probably already have guessed, you know, I'm also very interested in immigrant voices, you know, being an immigrant myself, but from a, you know, mainstream Western culture. That's, again, part of that earlier conversations I was talking about who gets to tell the stories. I'm interested in the people who are living here in Ireland as their home, who aren't being necessarily reflected on the bookshelves or in the media, and yet are right here, mm-hmm, in our own community with amazing food and amazing stories to share. So stories are very much central to Bloster Books. And I've been noticing in the past 6 months how many cookbooks these days have such and such as the title, and then recipes and stories, mm-hmm, as their subtitle. It's, people often say, well, why even bother buying a cookbook? Every recipe you could ever want is available for free on the internet. That's true, but where's the story? That's why we buy cookbooks. It's to have that personal connection, not just like this goes well with crusty bread and a salad. You know, it's the personal background, it's the culture, it's the history. I mean, that's what makes food writing so exciting. And it's not just recipes, it's all of these things all wrapped up together.
And just as a side note, there will be no salad in hot fat, just in case anyone thinks.
Unless it's deep fried.
In case anybody is scared, that's out there in the open now, so yeah, it's all crossed off. I'm interested to hear how you have seen the publishing industry evolve over the years. I think you've kind of hit on aspects of that throughout our chat so far, but has it evolved?
I would say, like, even when I look back at the very first cookbooks I worked on back in the early 2000s, they were all, you know, paperback. This is this really old school. And there's a term for this, and it's escaping me at the minute. You know, you'd have a book with no photos, except there'd be this section in the middle.
Yes.
And it's all the photos all in one section.
Yes.
You might have a cookbook like that, where it was just nothing, 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 and then they're all there together.
Oh, no.
And again, this was part of my, there has to be another way thinking. Part of the reason we have such beautiful cookbooks now is technology. The printing technology evolved and meant it became cheaper to do the full color photography not just limited to those eight pages in the middle, and it could be throughout. So that goes hand in hand with what we've seen. Like, I often think back to Nigella Lawson's How to Eat.
Yes.
No images whatsoever, zero, except for the chapter openers, and it's just a pot or a pan. There's no images in that book. That would be practically impossible to publish that book today with no images. You know, it's just, you just can't do it. They have to have images. And I think that was kind of a watershed moment where the technology turned then, and it became economical and viable to do the big, beautiful, full color cookbooks. So that's been interesting. Like, once you kind of know that, it's interesting to see how in the past 20 years, things really kind of opened up for these lifestyle cookbooks. And it's interesting that even 15 years ago, you look at the photographs and it was really close-ups of the food, yeah, like no background. And now it's all these tableaus and it's all about that distressed wood,
yes,
background, and, you know, the setting this beautiful scene that you just want to pull up a chair. So that's been interesting to see the way photography has evolved as well. And the writing itself, like you said, it's much more story driven, mm-hmm, not so much just give me the recipe and turn the page, you know. So it's and of course another big driver would be the celebrity chef. Again, you kind of look back to the US, the rise of the Food Network and that whole stable of Food Network TV stars, and not just kind of celebrity TV chefs, but also social media influencers who get into the food space, mm-hmm, and then come out with cookbooks as well. So that's been another, mm-hmm, development, you know, modern development. The big news these days is all about TikTok,
yes,
and cookbooks that are going to be coming out of TikTok inevitably.
Okay, cool.
Isn't it crazy actually when you say that? Because it's the thing of especially us who would be like, we are primarily food writers ourselves, and then pigeonholed into the world of, oh, you're Instagrammers. And it's still that desire of, no matter what, you still want to be in print, you want to have and hold it. And it's so funny that everyone talks about TikTok being the future and everything else is dead because TikTok will take over the entire world. But it'd be nice to have a cookbook from TikTok. It's so crazy, but it will happen.
There's something about a book. It's just,
yeah.
And again, going back to that whole, oh, but everything's online and, it, you know, free content. It's like, but what is it about a book,
mm,
more than just about any other thing you can think of, that has this gravitas and allure to it? I mean, I've been working in books my whole life and I still get a thrill when I pick up a new book, mm, or go into a bookshop. It just never gets old. You know, the new book smell, like, oh, going to the, yeah, library. I just,
so special.
I love it. It's just magic. Yeah, the, well, books are really special.
It's an exciting, exciting time in publishing, and it's exciting as you are opening up a, I guess, unexplored chapter.
Big time, big time. And I think while you're talking about cookbooks and that feeling of cookbooks and everything like that, what cookbook are you loving at the moment?
Ooh, tough question. Hmm. Well, so first of all, I have to say, I'm so happy the libraries are, yes, open again, because I'm not sure if many people know, you can check out cookbooks from the library, which is
dangerous. So,
because, I mean, you know, it's one thing to stand in the store and you're just giving it the quick flip,
yeah,
but this way you can take it home, you can have a proper sit down and read of it, you can make some of the recipes. Because another aspect of the Blasta books is, cookbooks are really expensive to buy. They're 35, 40 euros these days. Blasta books are going to be priced at 15 euros. If you're going to buy that big cookbook, you want to be really sure you're going to get your money's worth, right? So this is a way to give it a little road test at home before you buy as well, if you get it from the library. And I actually love it when you get a cookbook from the library and it's got like that stained page.
Splatters.
Like, oh, somebody else, you know, made this. I suppose that's not very, you know, hygienic in COVID world. But anyway, I've been happy to be getting some books out of the library again. I'm just thinking, what books have I bought? I just bought Ripe Figs by Yasmin Khan, which is an incredible book. So again, she's got recipes from the Eastern Mediterranean, but it's peppered with stories of refugees, of the communities of people on those Greek islands who are now living with this new, you know, community,
mm,
in their home, and just really shines a light on some important work that's being done in those places in terms of kitchens and restaurants and food. You know, of course, it's all centered around food. That's a really special book that I'm really, yeah, I would recommend that one for anyone. And perfect for summer, that kind of summery Mediterranean food.
Kristen, thank you so much for being a part of this episode of Chew the Fat. How can anybody tuning in support you or hear more?
Great, yes. So our Kickstarter is still live until June 14th. So if you go to kickstarter.com and just type in Blasta Books, that's B-L-A-S-T-A Books, you'll see that Venn diagram illustration I was telling you about, and you can follow the link there. And like I said, you can see every book that's available, as well as some fun extras. Like, for example, yourselves are offering a deep frying masterclass. So we've got a few of those kind of masterclasses and workshops. We've got a beautiful art print that Nikki Hooper did just for this campaign of the Modern Irish Pantry. So you can snap up one of them. So that's all there until June 14th, after which point we also have our own website, blastabooks.com. And we're on social media as Blastabooks.
Kristen, thank you so much for joining us on Chew the Fat.
Thanks.
A huge thank you to our interviewees on this episode of Chew the Fat, to Suzanne, to Mark from Click and Collection, and to Kristen Jensen from Blasta Books. It has been such a pleasure getting to talk to them.
It sure has. And if you need any more details, you can find them all on our social media about Blasta Books and Click and Collection, if you please. Be sure to make sure you hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on so you don't miss an episode. Plus, as we've mentioned one or two times throughout the episode, there is, of course, the archives of Chew the Fat episodes from the last couple of years, since 2018. There's some really great interviews for you to listen to there. And if you are enjoying listening to this, rate it or share it out. Give us a little boost during the coming weekend. Be really, really appreciated. Or if you'd like to support this creation of this podcast, you can also visit buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat, and I can guarantee you we will not spend it on an outdoor pint next week. I can't guarantee that. I can't guarantee that. And we'll be back for another edition of Chew the Fat from Patrick and from myself. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.